AirPods, I'm at the Hotel Utah in San Francisco with British singer-songwriter Tom McRae. Tom, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
But I never left. I was always right here. In your head, all the colors you thought were kings.
I understand you got your start singing in the church choir. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my dad was the vicar, and at 7 or 8 years old, I was drafted in to sing in the choir, and I'd sing the Christmas carols and walk down the aisle at the midnight mass, singing Once in Royal David City and that sort of stuff. And that was where I first really fell in love with singing. And I guess the high, girly voice I sing in is probably still like the little choir boy I was 30-odd years ago.
Excellent. When did you make the move from church music to, say, popular music, or the style of music you do now?
Yeah, I wouldn't define my music as
popular
in any way.
Music, no, but, you know, more modern.
I think, yeah. I don't know. I never really studied or was into church music, but it had a spirituality to it, and it had a structure to it, actually. And that was my first experience of good tunes, good melodies, some brilliant hymns and brilliant carols. And then when I was about, like everyone getting into music as a sort of early teenager, I fell in love with Kate Bush and people like that, and Peter Gabriel and Bob Dylan, and started playing guitar when I was about 15, 16. So the kind of standard way that everyone does.
You have a very lush and decorative writing style. First for you? What comes first for you, the lyrics or the music?
It's all a symbiotic sort of process, really, because I can't call anything a song unless it has words that I believe in, and I can't put just words down without having music, otherwise it's just bad poetry. So it all has to come together, and I have notebooks full of ideas that I write down when I travel or read, or, you know, just in the course of everyday life. And then when I'm sitting down at piano or guitar and I have chord progressions, I try and put the two together, but it's you never sit down with a sheet of words and put them straight to music, or write a complete piece of music and then try and fit words to it. It doesn't work like that. There's no strict formula. I just wave a magic wand and it happens.
Have you always had the natural ability to write lyrics, or was there some, I mean, because you were originally a student of politics and government, and how did writing come natural? Or?
Not really, I don't think so. I mean, I think like everyone's first attempts at anything, they were pretty terrible. And it took me a long time to write lyrics that I thought I could completely believe in, and I thought that I had enough poetry in them and I had enough mystery and enough of reality as well, enough real life, without making it too obvious. So it took me a while to figure out my writing sort of style, and it still does. I mean, I still struggle with it every day trying to get it right. So.
Yeah. Two of your most loved songs, as well as two of my favorite songs, are End of the World and Lord, How Long?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about how these songs came about, where you wrote them? And
Well, End of the World News was written for my first record, and I was doing dead-end jobs that I hated, and I was desperately trying to do music and spending all my spare time doing it, and in this way that people around you do, they think you're wasting your time, and they say to you, are you sure you're doing the right thing? Do you want to do music? And I looked at everyone else doing their sort of day jobs and thought, I don't really want to do what you're doing, so I'll do this, so I'll have a go. And then I think I was trying to write a grand song about popular culture, about the new information age that was just happening, and I don't know, it's one of those I'll try and write about everything songs, and include a bit of religion, a bit of politics, and try and have a pop chorus. That was what I was trying to do. I don't know whether it works or not, but that's that.
Wasting my time.
Lord How Long. That was just simply trying to write a song about the war in Iraq, and I had no idea how to write a song about that subject because I'm not there. I don't have any friends there. But I wanted to write something that felt personal, felt like it was a letter from a soldier who was there, or someone who was injured or dying, or just try and get some of the emotion, but make it personal, not make a grand "war is wrong" statement, because you know, that doesn't really work these days. You know, everyone's grown up beyond that, and we're all too cynical. So I was trying to make almost a prayer, try and write a prayer, and I don't know. It came out good. I like that one.
It's a beautiful song.
So how long, Lord, how long, and how long, Lord, how long, the stars above.
Of everything you have written, is there one piece, one particular song that stands out as a favorite for you?
The one I'm about to write. The next one's going to be great. And if that isn't the one, it'll be the one after that. I like a lot of the songs I've written. Some I don't really like, and some I grow less fond of over time, and some I grow to like more over time. It's a really strange relationship you have with stuff like that. I'm proud of certain tracks. I'm proud of "Boy with a Bubble Gun." I think that's one of my favourite songs, and I don't get tired of playing it. I get tired of playing some of the others, but that one I can find stuff in every night. But honestly, it's the thing I'm about to do next that keeps me doing this and excites me. It's, I'm always thinking, well, maybe the next song is going to be the really good one. Maybe that will be the best thing I do. And I think that, I think everyone thinks like that. I think Paul McCartney thinks like that even now, you know.
The Boy with the Bubble Gun, I love that song, actually. And can you tell us a little bit about that one, where that came from? And
Imagine frustrated guy sitting in front of the TV news, looking at all the crap that's happening in the world, and thinking, I wish I could change something, anything. I wish I could, for instance, just kill that guy I've just seen on the TV screen. It may have been one of the Bushes, it may have been Pinochet, it may have been, I don't know, someone, Tony Blair, who knows. And I thought, but all I do is I write songs, and that's not very effective anymore, I don't think. And it's, I'm equating having a bubble gun instead of a real gun. You don't change anything with a bubble gun. You just send out these little beautiful things that float into the air and then they burst. And I thought, well, that's what I do. That's what songs are for me. They're these little pretty things that I hope maybe just either look good for a short time or pop next to someone's eye and make them squint for a bit. That's you know, that's all I ever do. I don't really think I can change anything with music, but I wanted to.
I really like that. It's nice.
The boy with the bubble gun, I'm taking aim. I cannot hit to hurt or cause you pain. If words could kill, I'd spell out your name. I'm the boy with the bubble gun, the boy with the bubble gun. I'm the boy with the bubble gun. What to do? If songs could kill, this one's for you.
So you've been doing this hotel cafe tour. You've done this a couple times now. What is it about this kind of tour that you enjoy and that brought you back to doing it again?
Well, the tours that I've done, both over here in the States and in Europe, they were just happened because a bunch of friends met at the right time, the right place in LA a few years ago. And we all liked each other, liked hanging out, and we thought, let's go on the road, because at the time none of us had huge stuff going on in the business. We didn't have big followings, and some of us still don't. And it was just it seemed like a really fun community idea. I took over a few of those guys to Europe, and we've done two tours around Europe, and I've been on a couple of tours with them around the States. It's just friends helping friends, really. I think we're all kind of hoping that it'll become part of the fabric of musical culture, and people won't care who's on the bill. They'll just go and see a great night of music, and be like putting an iPod on stage on shuffle, and you might not know any of the stuff, but you'll like it.
So. So what can your fans expect from you in the future as far as touring and recording?
No idea. I've kind of settled into this little bit of routine of this is my life. I write and record and try and tour at least once a year. I'm trying to tour at the times that I want to. I'm trying to stay off the road and concentrate more on writing. But the world doesn't really work like that. You have to get out and support your stuff. So I'm going to try and tour a little bit less in Europe, maybe tour a little bit more in the States, maybe base myself more in New York, and try and get more stuff going on over here, because I have a slightly better career in Europe. It's at a higher level, and I want to raise the stakes up to that. But that's business talk. I don't really. All I want to do is write a good selection of songs and make a really good album, because that's what keeps me going.
Mm-hmm. At the end of all my interviews, I like to ask a few sort of so intimate questions.
Yes,
that's a little bit more fun.
Yes, okay.
So
I'll try and be fun.
What's the first record you ever bought?
It's absolutely true. It was a church jumble sale, and I bought Crying in the Chapel, Elvis.
Oh, excellent.
It was a jukebox single, and it had the middle missing, so, you know, I had to go and buy a special record deck to be able to get the little bit to be able to play the thing.
Do you still have that?
I do, yeah.
Excellent.
Are you kidding me? An Elvis single? Yeah.
What record do you own that is your greatest guilty pleasure? Your friends would probably be shocked and horrified to know that you own it and enjoy it.
Well, I have an issue with this whole notion of guilty pleasures, because I don't, at my age, I don't care. If I like it, I like it, and I don't feel any guilt whatsoever. But I think I might skip past a few tracks if my friends could see on my iPod that I had the Barry Manilow. And I'm a huge Barry Manilow fan, and I always have been and always will be. And I'm not admitting to being guilty, feeling guilty about it, but I will admit that it's cheesy as hell. But I love it.
Excellent. What was the first concert you ever went to?
The first full-on rock concert was the Waterboys, and probably about 1985, 1986, something like that. And the first band I fell in love with, and the first band that made me want to do music. I stood about 6 inches in front of Mike Scott and was completely blown away. And about, I don't know, 10, 15 years later, I ended up touring the States with them and hanging out. And it's one of those moments that always seemed amazing about, you never think that you get to do music anyway, and you never think you get to meet your heroes. And suddenly having been that guy watching this band rock his world, and then suddenly being on tour with him, seemed like everything had come full circle.
If you could do or had to do something other than being a musician, what would that be?
I think I'd like to be a ninja assassin today. I think I would like to be able to move quietly among the shadows and just kill people at will, in a painless way, and do it quickly and silently. But I don't know. The thing about being any sort of artist or any sort of, you know, anyone who doesn't sort of conform to certain routines and situations, you feel you could do anything. And I feel that, I'm not arrogant or overconfident, there's plenty of things I'd be crap at, but I feel that if I changed my mind tomorrow and wanted to do something different, I'd do that and do it with as much passion as I do music. I don't feel that there's any alternative careers I don't have a plan B.
Mm-hmm.
I only have plan A's, but I might have lots of plan A's. Right now I'm doing music.
Excellent. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Can you hear me over the noise?
I hope everyone can hear us.
The room is so packed, people. You need to know that this room is so heaving with everyone waiting to see me go on stage. It is. If only you could see how big this room is. It's quite intimidating, and I'm a little bit nervous. It's very special. It's going to be an amazing evening. And if the three people that are here stay, it should be fun.
Did you have anybody you wanted to say hi to out there?
I don't have any friends. What, have you heard my music?
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You used to be young, You used to be young, and now you're searching for a sign with your name to define you, the king of the game. What will you do when there's nothing left for you to earn and for you to learn? So dose me up once there's nothing.